जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय द्वैत चंद्र जय गौर भक्त वृंद जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय द्वैत चंद्र जय गौर भक्त वृंद देखेन देखे यत अभक्तिर गान देखेन देखे यत अभक्तिर गान उलखन देखे यत सूर्य किरण उलखन देखे यत सूर्य किरण Kiran, 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 Kiran's rays. Surya, Kiran, Kiran. So, even while looking, they cannot see the non-devotee. Just as the owls cannot see the rays of the sun. So, one cannot understand Krishna through logic or by any other means than by mercy. Mercy of the devotees, mercy of Krishna himself. Only then can one understand. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu particularly comes for that purpose to reveal transcendental knowledge. One time, Advaita Acharya had assembled the devotees. He had assembled the devotees, and at that time, Advaita Acharya said, "Today we're not going to chant Hare Krishna. Today we're going to chant the holy names of Lord Chaitanya." So everyone thought it was a great idea, although at the same time they were a little worried because they thought that Lord Chaitanya might not like it. So then Advaita Acharya said, "No, it's no problem, we'll just chant." He said, and everyone said, "Okay then." And then he said, "But I will not chant because when I sing so loud that everyone becomes afraid, that I roar. So I will just dance." And everyone's like, he pushes us to do it, and now, now he's not singing. But anyway, they did it anyway, and then became so ecstatic. And then Advaita Acharya became so ecstatic that he just began to roar, and he began to sing, and he sang the song that he had written himself. And he explained that Gaurachandra Narayan, that Gaurachandra is not different from Narayan's Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in that way, the devotees were celebrating a secret that no one could understand. In the Chaitanya Chandramrita, it is described that previously the Lord came to this planet and relieved the burden of the earth by destroying and killing many, many demons, like Lord Ramachandra killing 14,000 rakshasas in the forest, he said. But now, that same Lord is relieving the burden of the earth by dancing on its surface. So, it's a different approach. The approach of playfulness, the approach which is not about killing evil, but transforming evil, transforming those who are somehow or other caught up in destructive activity. So that's the world. That's the activity of the world. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes and transforms everything in the world. That is quite amazing. One didn't think it was possible. But demons, even demons, somehow or other, are becoming devotees. So Lord Chaitanya's mercy is like that, that it captures people. Krishna. Krishna is the only worthy topic. Krishna is the only worthy object of meditation. There's nothing but Krishna, and there's no other benefit than serving Krishna. Nothing else. Nothing else needs to be done also. Many examples like the story of Magrari. Magrari, the hunter who somehow or other was half killing animals, and then by Narada requested to give up this horrible activity. And Narada said, I mean, where did you learn such things? It's very sinful to half kill animals. Better kill them completely. But I learned from my father. And he used to laugh, and he taught me how to do this. I said, like, but this is really, really demoniac. This is really, you have to stop this. I said, okay, I can stop it. If you ask me, I will stop. No problem. So then what should I do? Narada said, you simply follow my instructions. All right, I'm ready. And then the first instruction was, cut the string of your bow. But that's, give up my livelihood, basically, my job, you know, quit your job. Right? That on which you depend in not a very strong economy. So it was risky, you know, very risky. But anyway, he did it. Magrari cut that string of his bow. And then, But how will I eat? And Narada said, don't worry, I will arrange. And then Makrari went with his wife living in a little hut, and people in the village, they were all talking, this is amazing, this hunter, he has become a great devotee. That's bringing him something. And somehow or other, so much came that they had more than they needed for their maintenance. So this kind of dynamics, that is indeed really how it works. We may think, yeah, but what about my security? Yeah? I mean, I need some security, something, you know, like a little money in the bank, a credit card maybe, and some other things like, you know, just in case, right? Just in case something happens, you know, just be prepared. What about my security? But the security, the Vaishnava's security is his goodwill with the people. That is the best security, because goodwill goes much further than the bank. You know, the bank says, well, sorry, but you have maybe 150,000, and if the bill is 160, sorry, you know, the bank is not paying the extra 10,000, no way. But goodwill can pay anything. Yes, a million, all right, what to do? We'll pay. Goodwill is like that, because goodwill has a heart and the bank has no heart. That's for sure. The bank is just cold and making profit and impersonal. So what kind of security is that? You know, plastic money, plastic card, and one day no money in the bank. It happened already, right, in some places in the crisis, that there was no money in the bank. People went to the bank to take their money, and the bank had no money. What do? You put your money in the bank all this time, and when you want to take it out, it's not there. So what kind of guarantee? But goodwill will never be depleted. So this is really how the Vaishnava community functions, away from this artificial society which is based on impersonal security, insurance. Previously, again, goodwill was the insurance. When relationships were there, that was the insurance. Right? It still works for any people in the world. The family is your insurance. And life was going on as much as it's going on now. It's not like, oh my God, before we invented insurance, life was so terrible. People were dropping dead like flies. Left and right. Serious. You know, no, I mean, you know, it was like they would imagine they were depending on their friends and family and maybe even on the village, you know. Oh my God. Oh, geez, you know. That must have been terrible. No, it worked fine. Yeah. And it helped also to have good relationships, you see. It's like in countries where the government took over, it's like, an interesting country is Sweden, because it has it is a very socially supportive structure, a socialistic structure actually. And basically the idea is the state takes care of everything. So family is something that is really not relevant. It's the state. You know, you rely on the state, you don't rely on your family. Therefore, families, we don't really want families, and we want to sort of minimize families, less family, right? Less family and more state. And everything comes from the state. It's interesting how it really works like that. The state is very benevolent and gentle and always provides, no problem. Yes, everything provided by the state. But, you know, everything impersonal, very impersonal. So it's like everything becomes extremely impersonal in such a condition. See, in a family situation, everything depends on relationships. So Vaishnavism depends on that, depends on service, depends on giving people something valuable. Really, giving them valuable knowledge so that they become indebted. Giving them valuable support, giving answers, real answers, like that. It works. There is no difficulty at all in maintaining in such an environment. And yes, that's how the world should be. The world should not depend on an artificial global economy and so on. No need for, you know, families that are spread out over six countries. And yes, every family is sort of going that way these days. A relative in one corner, a relative in another corner. What a weird world. Strange, you know. Just a village. Everyone in the village. And in the village then, it all is simple. Because there are relationships. And and relationships become important. It's like when you live in a city, it doesn't really matter because people are just faces of, you don't know them. Right? It's all these faces of people you don't know. So there's this endless faces, meaningless faces. And when you live in a village, you know everybody. And, well, you have to live with them. And so, you know, you better invest in the relationship so that it works. So that is actually the natural way of life. Of course, the world goes the opposite direction.
In the year 2000,
35% of the world population lived in cities, and now it's over 55%. So it's a huge increase in a very short time. We're all running away from the villages. But actually, village life, life in the country, is the future. Sometimes you see these kind of movies about the future. You used to have the Flintstones, and you've had the Jetsons. The Jetsons. You know the Jetsons? You saw the Jetsons, or Mrs. Jetson would go to work, fire the Milky Way. There were almost staircases in the house. There was a tube, and you just go whoop, up and down. Kind of people thought that would be the future. But that will not be the future. The future will be milking cows. Milking cows. But not just milking cows. At one point in my life, I decided that, yes, I have enough of all the smog and all the crazy traffic. I used to live downtown, and when I would step out of my door, there would be a bus flying by at like about 30 centimeters from my face. And you sort of stand there totally peaceful, as if it's nothing, that, you know, this huge thing of metal flies by your face, 30 centimeters away, totally, you know. And that was life, till one day I thought, this is actually mad, what am I doing here? So I decided to go to the countryside. But then, yeah, in the countryside, I lacked, there were farmers, you know, like just farmers, it wasn't stimulating, and there was no intellectual exchange, no philosophy, nothing like, you know, to challenge the mind and the intellect from what you get in the cities. You know, you go somewhere, really deep, interesting conversations. I mean, you try there, like, you know, with Farmer Joe is going to talk about, like, you know, the size of the cauliflowers. We have grown the biggest cauliflower in the entire district. Wow. That's amazing. See, I never got it why people get excited about growing the biggest cauliflower in the district. Because at the end, they take one for the sabji, and I take two. Two smaller ones and get the same amount of cauliflower in my sabji. That's the big deal. Whether it's one big one or two small ones, you know. When it's all cut up and cooked, you don't notice it anymore. It's all the same. So I never got, what's all the noise? You know, the biggest cauliflower in the district. Wow. So farmers sometimes go the other way. That's what I'm saying. What to do. Plus, life in the countryside is also not just ideal. It seemed so peaceful, and there was a big barn somewhere a kilometer away, and I walked past it, and one day I walked inside, and then I saw, yeah, it was filled with cows and so on, like some sort of bio factory. So there wasn't somewhere, you know, they truck in the food and truck out the milk, and in between there's a living entity that's sort of really not in a comfortable position. So, yeah, so I'm not speaking about, so my point is that a village, Prabhupada spoke about these villages, Gita Nagari. Prabhupada wrote this article about Gita Nagaris, villages based on the Bhagavad Gita, and he wanted such Gita Nagaris all over the world. You can still search a little and find the article about the Gitanagaris, which is very nice. Villages based on the Bhagavad Gita. And that's how it is, you know. I used to travel through India by a slow train, really hot trains with the window open. And by the way, an experience I had once, I'll tell you in a moment. But I saw, then you see the fields, and in every field there's a little temple. Right? It's not just fields, but in every field, everywhere, little temples, because people worship. Before the grains are planted, brahmanas come, offerings are made to create auspiciousness. So everything, the Supreme Lord is part of every aspect of life, not just, I mean, even now in India, you know, you see someone gets a new car and, you know, there have to be four lemons under the wheels and a chili hanging on the mirror. Right? And then, you know, it has to be, otherwise, you can't have a car without chili. That's absolutely essential. But it's kind of part of a tradition, for everything you ask blessings, and then we do it for machines. Vishwakarma Puja, every year they worship the demigod Vishwakarma, and at that time you worship Vishwakarma to bless your tools. So someone's, you know, doing a puja to his bicycle, and someone, you know, something for the car, and someone else, the hammers or the screwdrivers, whatever you see them all worshiping. You see some ISKCON brahmacharis quietly worshiping the bicycle. Spoken back. But an auspicious society, without a doubt. Then still more auspicious is a society where everything is centering around Krishna, where everything is offered to Krishna and blessings are obtained from Krishna for devotional service. So such villages are the future. Such way, that's how sooner or later we will live, and we may see it in our lifetime. This whole crazy world where everyone is just communicating by his phone and so on, according to the BBC, has about 4 more years of life. According to the BBC, within about 4 years from now, the broadband will be so overloaded that it will not move at all. It will just come to a total standstill. And like the biggest jam you can imagine, it's like cyber traffic totally jammed. Our long cyber jams, right? The only time you can actually still get on the internet with your phone is in the deep dark hours of the night. But even then, you know, there are many others trying with you. So even with 4G, then, or by then, God knows what they've got, how many G's, you know. I mean, it's going to be lots of G's. It's slow. It's so slow. And in South Africa, anyway, the internet is slow. They did a test and sent a letter, you know, with an attached file, average size, from Pietermaritzburg to Durban, and at the same time they sent a pigeon with the same message. The pigeon reached first. So what shall we say? All for the pigeons. Yeah. Yay. Yes. Glories to the pigeons. It's the way to go. That's the way to go. And the thing is, you know, the good thing about pigeons is you don't have a feeling that the pigeon is spying on you. whereas with your phone, you're never really sure, you know, who's on the other side of that phone? Is there somebody behind you? Kind of. Look at the pigeon. If there's anyone behind, you know it's Krishna, nobody else. Yeah, that's all. So in that way, you feel comfortable. Yes. So everything works fine, and that's the point. People have always had solutions for human needs. It's not that in the past human needs were not provided for. They were, it was all going on. Instead of hospitals, brahmanas would come door to door, and they would know so much about herbs, give some medicine, read your palm on the way, and look at your karma, and give you some advice. What can be said, you know? So Nirvishesha Sunyavat, Prabhupada used to say, Namaste Saraswati Deva Gauravani Pacharine, that on the order of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he came to preach Gauravani, the instructions of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to drive out this nirvishesh and sunyavat. And that's what we have. Paschita desh desatarina, in the Western countries, not in India. See, in India, you know, it's like, yes, Swamiji, yes, it's all one, you know, and you have altars with unlimited deities, right? I mean, if there's a deity, right, put him on your altar. That's the Indian approach, right? It's an altar, an Indian altar and an Indian train have something in common in the sense that they're overloaded, you know, with personalities. Fact. And why is that, right? Why is it? That, well, you know, why not? Right? Why not put a picture on the altar or a statue or whatever, because you never know. You might get some blessings. That's the idea behind it all. You know, it might work. You know, there's no laws. Let's put it on there. So sometimes we have laughed at India's Swamiji, it is all one. It is impersonalism. But actually, impersonalism is in our own life. And we can see it. We can see how the whole mechanistic world that we live in is terribly impersonal, and we're making it more and more impersonal. And in fact, right, you know, yes, I mean, you know, you wouldn't just answer a call directly. You screen them first, and you know, like that. Yeah, jeez, you know, gosh, who's trying to call me? Unknown number. Oh, forget it. No way. No. It's like, unknown number spoke in a message on the answer phone. Voicemail, yes. Okay, well, maybe next time you take the unknown number. So very careful, very careful. Impersonalism everywhere. Thoroughly in every aspect of life. And we're comfortable with it. We'd rather not know anybody, you know. It's like, we'd rather not talk to the neighbors, you know. We'd rather not have any neighbors, you know. It's like, me. Robots are coming in. See these vacuum cleaners that are like robotic vacuum cleaners. No more people needed. So again, you know, without criticism, but Sweden is very advanced in this regard. And you arrive And you come into Stockholm and there's no people. It's like everything is electronic and there are voices coming out of the wall and sort of things open, things close, right? And suitcases appear, but there's no people. I mean, no one working there, you know, instead of looking, is there any? No. Yeah. If your bag is not here, push this button and speak into this receiver. Yeah? There's no desk where you can go. You can speak into some sort of microphone and say, my bag didn't arrive. Then, okay, what's the number of your tag? And then, okay, you read it in and then they see if they find your bag. So it's funny. Impersonalism. Uh-huh. Imperson. So this modern way of life is actually bringing us deeper and deeper into impersonalism. And Krishna consciousness is just the opposite. So not relying on all these impersonal things, but relying on people and relying on relationships. And this is, and once that's there, then when relationships become important, see, when you depend on your neighbor, then you want to be nice to your neighbor. And if you don't depend on your neighbor, then, you know, the guy's just a nuisance, you know. So Lord Chaitanya's movement is gaining ground, gaining more and more ground. And although we don't see like a huge revolution, but gradually this knowledge is becoming becoming known, it's filtering into society. And nowadays, reincarnation, standard thing, you know. Nobody's shocked about it anymore. Karma, you know what I mean? Yeah, karma. You know. I mean, if you go, I one day went to some sort of small village in a small country, sort of really remote, you know, and I gave a lecture about karma. And people went like, karma, you know, I mean, you have anything else to say? Something new? Yeah, that's old hat. They heard that so many times. So the world is absorbing so many elements of knowledge. Sometimes we think that the Dalai Lama is our competitor. You know, we think like, gosh, why is the Dalai Lama in every bookstore in the world? It's really too much. Prabhupada should be there. You know, the Dalai Lama is preparing the ground. You know, he's taking people away from their narrow-minded Christian morale, right? Sort of pulling them out from there, and then gives them something which doesn't have much substance. So then, sooner or later, then after a while, behind Prabhupada's books, and then they're already familiar. Oh, yeah, karma, yeah, I know that. Reincarnation, yes, I know that. From the Dalai Lama. They always call me in Australia. Hey, Dalai Lama. Here also, actually, the security in the airports. Dalai Lama. So they don't know the difference, you know. They don't even know who's the Dalai Lama. As far as I'm concerned, I could be the Dalai Lama. Sometimes there are Chinese people, and they come to me, and they just bow and offer so much respect and so on, and they think I'm a Buddhist, and I don't tell them that I'm not. I never tell them. I just simply, you know, bless them and tell them, you know, give them a little spiritual knowledge, and they're so happy. They're very happy. You know. So one day, you know, I will be the Dalai Lama. No problem. So, what's the problem? Krishna consciousness. So everything is preparing for Krishna consciousness, and everything is penetrating more and more. So many things are there that are clearly coming from, inspired by Prabhupada's books and this knowledge. So many things we see surfacing at times. I mean, even one time I read a book from Sai Baba, and then I saw, you know, I just came across it and I just looked at it, and then I came across a whole section which was directly Prabhupada. I go, wait a minute, you got that from Prabhupada. It was clearly verbatim almost, you know, plagiarism practically. And really, like, I mean, just can't copy, you know. But then, of course, instead of saying, it's Krishna, I say, I am that, you know, not Krishna, but it's using, even, so I realized, even Sai Baba read Prabhupada's Gita, yeah, from that, yeah. It's like everywhere, penetrating. So this is, so we should not think that the world is not changing, and one day it will, in a dramatic way. But that takes Krishna, because that's the analogy of the sparrow and who lost its eggs in the ocean. And that sparrow said, I will drink the water of the ocean if you don't return the eggs now. The ocean was not impressed, didn't even bother to reply. But then Garuda heard about it. Garuda came and Garuda said, so, Mr. Ocean, you got some eggs somewhere. I want those eggs now, otherwise I'm very thirsty and I might just drink all your water. Yeah. Immediately Varuna came, yes, Mr. Garuda, of course, Mr. Garuda, here are the eggs, by the way, Mr. Garuda. So, it is like that. So the story just shows a little sparrow's determination. So when it comes to changing the world, we are the sparrows. We cannot change the world. Who are we? Yeah. But we can attract the mercy of Krishna, and by the mercy of Krishna, if he starts to help, then it can change. We can take steps to change the world, but then it depends on Krishna. And that's how this movement will actually suddenly take off, and the whole world will take it, simply because Krishna will make a move. That's all. And when Krishna makes a move, that's when it suddenly happens. And yeah, and the evidence is Russia, right? You know, where in the 80s we started an Amnesty International-like campaign for the Russian devotees. There was a handful, and they were all in labor camps and in jails, and it was like some died, and it was, you know, there's a book, Salted Bread, and it's described there how they, in the jail, they would like take a razor blade, break it in half, wrap it around a pencil with a paper clip, and then put some electric wires, and that was for making hot water. Not just hot water, but for boiling water so that you could drink it. So otherwise, the water was totally fully contaminated, so all water had to be boiled, and there was electricity, like this. So things like that. Anyway, so there was a devotee named Kirti Raj, who was like huge, you know, like an American, but from a Russian, a Polish religion, I think, but an enormous man, like, you know, he could definitely play in the South African rugby team. He would fit right in. And, he led this campaign, and the campaign was basically press conferences about everything that was going on and what was being done to the devotees. And then at one point the Russian government released these devotees. Pollard sang his song as a kid, Mr. Gorbachev. Please release them, set them free. And all that paid off. But that was a miracle. That was really a miracle. I mean, now it's maybe history, and you've heard it before, but we couldn't believe it, right? That they actually let them go. That was amazing. Yeah. They let the devotees go, and they let them all go to India, and we were there on Calcutta Airport receiving them, and they had two devotees who were specially appointed to hug all the Russian devotees. That was Bhakti Charu Maharaj and Kesava Bharati Maharaj, because they are very good at it, you know. So they very feelingly were hugging all these Russian devotees, and meanwhile Indrajumna Maharaj is leaving the kirtan with Govinda Maharaj. And it was cooking. It was really something. And then, yeah, the same happened in Mayapur. And there was this one devotee who they had put into a psychiatric hospital, and they had given him psychiatric drugs, and they gave him this drug where when you sat down you felt, I gotta stand up, and as soon as you be standing you feel, I gotta sit down. So he's just standing up, sitting down for hours until the drug sort of was wearing out. So that's very hellish type of treatment, right? So these devotees, they, what they went through. And they were, and he was somehow or other, all throughout, one word played in his head, Kesava, Kesava, Kesava. And he asked, then he asked. That word Kesava gave him strength. That word Kesava, right? That sort of pulled him through. So then he asked, what does it mean, Kesava? And then, okay, he got the answer. Killer of the KC demon. A very powerful horse that was just unstoppable was stopped by Kesava, Krishna. So somehow or other, whether it was the super soul
or what it was,
but phew, what a story. So these devotees went through so much. And they came out. And then somehow or other, Russia began the glasnost and so on, right, and began to relax the situation a little. And then one day there was an announcement on Reuters, that Russia was allowing import of Western books, and some government order, and Hari Kesh immediately, the same day, without any delay, immediately shipped 100,000 Gitas. Immediately, the same day, bang, 100,000 Gitas. And they were stuck in a warehouse, and they wouldn't let them out because nobody knew about this announcement. And there was a huge fight, but eventually they got them out, right? And after that law was changed again, right? So there was only for a very short window, yeah? But somehow or other, Arikesh immediately acted on it and got these books in. And that was the seed capital. Then all the devotees started distributing those books, and that created the capital. And then they created more books in Russia itself, and then like it just took off into a huge, huge movement. Yeah. See, all transcendental, all Krishna. You know, you just see how Krishna will change everything. So I'm waiting for that day, because I was hoping that it was happening in the year 2000. You know, we were there was this rumor that the computers would crash and that everything would go down, and we were in Australia, the place where it's supposed to hit first. You know, so we're in Sydney waiting for the light to go out outside of a rave party with the kirtan. It never went out. What a letdown. Then I thought, it's the economic crisis when it really was going down. I thought, yay, it's going the right way, you know, yeah, no more money in the banks, yeah, inflation like mad, you know, soon it will be only paper, won't be worth anything. Oh, the times are getting good. And everyone was getting worried, and I was getting excited, and then it blew over. What a bummer. Again, you know. So I can't wait for the whole thing to collapse, everything to go wrong. Oh yes, great. Empty supermarkets, oh my God, what are we going to do? Oh dear, yes. Totally nothing on the shelves, right? No more jobs, no, nothing. What are you gonna do? Well, we gotta start growing something. That's about the only thing you do, man. The only thing you can do is grow some cabbages, boys. Some cabbage and potatoes, right? Yeah. And cauliflower. Yeah. Let's see who can grow the biggest cauliflower. And then before you know it, you know, then there's no more petrol. There's no more diesel. No, nothing, you know. Just queues and empty petrol pumps. I've seen it so many times in India. I know it, you know, empty petrol pumps. I've gone through this many times when things get rationed, so it happens. I've been through it. And then what you're going to do? Yeah, suddenly, you know, the bullocks, the horses, they come back from the stables, right? And we use them to plow the land. And then, you know, after a little while, I say, hey, this is sort of fun, actually. Hey, it's not bad. It's not bad at all. Yeah, it's actually more fun than a computer. Yeah. You see, and that day will come when the world once again will have fun. Yeah. Mm. And yeah, the man on the field, ladies milk the cows, and man will again be man, and women will again be women. You know? Gosh, you know. Jeez. Some adjustments have to be made. Some guys will have to get... Anyway, if you have no muscles, you can become a brahmana. <That's wrong. laughs> Then you gotta know your scriptures. That's serious about it. Because you can't Google things anymore. So these will be different times. Yeah. I'm looking forward. I can't wait. And according to the BBC, the internet's down in the next 4 years. You can start counting. It wasn't me, it was the BBC. Just listening to that. You know, BBC is very authorized. You know, so amongst the best in the world. Absolutely.
They are Thor.
No, already for the 4G. They had big problems with the broadband. They had to kick out a whole lot of television off the broadband. And just to get 4G going, a lot of people, they had to forego television, and then the government had to sort of create a whole thing, cabling, to somehow get these people television. There you go. Oh my God, I have to choose. And day by day, more people get a smartphone. Do you have one already?
The kids?
Sooner or later, you'll give in. Everybody does, sooner or later. You know? And once you got one, you can't live without anymore. These phones are smart. There's only one problem with them. Sometimes they're too smart. Especially with the spell checker, you know? Hare Krishna becomes Hate Krishna. Every time. Jeez, God. So stop this now, you know? How many times did I tell you? And every once in a while it sneaks in again. Hate Krishna.
One is disciplined. She doesn't know.
Yeah. Wait till you upgrade, you know. Yeah, can you imagine? No more upgrading, you know. This upgrading. God, isn't this a total nightmare? That's always everything upgrading. Yeah, life used to be the same, you know. There's no upgrading. It's like, yeah. A bullock was a bullock, a cow was a cow. You don't upgrade a cow. Do you have a turbo cow? It's a mad bullock. Yeah. So anyway, yes. I'm looking forward to the day. I know that some of you don't share my words. And some of you would say, well, can't Krishna consciousness take over the world a little more gentle, Maharaj? Does it really have to be so drastic? Nothing on the shelves. Ah, yes. If it's gradual, it's so boring. Yeah. You know, then it's sort of like they all go to Sunday school together and so on. I mean, we want really, like, then we get, like, the Hare Krishna church on every street corner, and they're all like, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare
Yeah,
and yeah,
second line.
Yeah, yeah.
Come in a little bit.
Well, we have to practice this. Raj will begin studying music, so he knows how it's to be done. He'll orchestrate it all. So gradually, you know, Hare Krishna is becoming mainstream. Once upon a time, it was an underground movement. It was just on the streets. It wasn't anywhere registered, and it was just going on somehow or other. Some guys made their money on the street, you know, ching ching boom, a magazine here, a magazine there, and somehow or other it went on. Then we became recognized as a religion in many countries all over the world, and subsequently we became invited, and we became priests, and and now we have a congregation worldwide, and yeah, it's all very cozy. A little boring. the wild days are over, you know, when devotees would just go anywhere to distribute books. And of course the police did not always appreciate. So one devotee was running with a box of books and the police was sort of chasing. And he ran into an alley and it was a dead-end alley. So what he did, there was a door, a big door, and he just pulled and fell, and it opened. He went inside. There was a corridor and a light at the end of the corridor. He walked in the corridor and he walked straight on stage, and there was an applause. And said, "Ah," said the man, the presenter said, "Ah, here is the man with the prizes. Oh, very nice." And he took the books and he gave everyone got a book, and then, you know, and then he said, "What's the bill?" And he gave him, and the devotee wrote the bill. And then in the end, you know what it turned out to be? It turned out to be a congress of butchers. It's a true story. It really happened. You know, I mean, those are adventurous days. Devotees were doing something, doing wild things.
Those vegetarian cookbooks. Vegetarian cookbooks.
I don't think they were vegetarian.
Maybe it's a twist to the story.
Yeah, no. Because I know the devotee.
Okay.
Purnatattva. In Belgium, it happened. I was there. I was also there, at the time, you know, not at the same place, but I used to go out at Purnatattva sometimes. Not on that day, but some days I was out at Purnatattva. And it was before the vegetarian cookbooks, because we never had those things. That came later, you know. We just, that was sort of that was considered Maya. It's not about Krishna, you know. It has to be about Krishna. No, we used to go door to door with the KRSNA book, you know what I mean? Did you already get the KRSNA book? No? They didn't get the KRSNA book, yeah. Everybody got the KRSNA book. And this way we distribute Krishna books door to door. Yeah. So many things. Now, so yeah, what can I say? I'm a dinosaur from revolutionary days. Can't wait till the whole world goes upside down. Sorry for that. Well, let's see. Maybe some feedback from your side. Too shocked.
On the basis of things you're saying, what do you think is the pressing need for devotees to do?
The pressing need for devotees is to go deep in their chanting and deep into Prabhupada's books and to somehow or other try now to make Krishna consciousness available to others. We should not fall for the cyber trap and think that let's just distribute electronic books. Of course it's good, but hard copies will last even when the internet's down. Yeah. They'll find them somewhere, right? And you know, there's still books around from grandma's days, you know what I mean? These really old books, smelly and like, you know, like kind of generic books. So books last a long time. It's like, and books go to many hands. But okay, yeah, cyberspace is okay. But we should print books, that's for sure. That's still. Because this is the time that is possible. See, it's like when now you can call, if you have the money, you can call some company and you can order 100,000 Gitas, and 2 weeks later you can have delivery if you have the cash. Yeah. Now that's possible. I mean, you know, when the technology days are over, can you just imagine some tiny little press, you know, which is, I don't know, how it's, what it's running on vegetable oil or something. Right. You know. And instead of pumping out a few books, you know, like, but it's going to be, it's not going to be 100,000 anymore. At the time of Lord Chaitanya, it was handwritten copies. Huh? Handwritten copies. And if you get a Bhagavatam, wow! Because which Brahmana wanted to hand copy the whole Bhagavatam? You know, it's not that many. Most would go for a shorter book, you know. So it was rare. It was rare to have a Bhagavatam. Now you just, you know, I've got a Bhagavatam. You got it everywhere, right? Got a whole bunch of hard copies, I've got soft copies everywhere, you know. Bhagavatam. It's like, you know, Bhagavatam. Database on your phone, database on your iPad, database on your computer, you know, it's like different versions, like original Bhagavatams, Prabhupada, it's like, you know, in electronic form, in hard form, and this, that, you know. I mean, now it's all so available, but it's not going to be like that. Like those first 100,000 books in Russia. So like in the beginning, before those books, they had some exhibitions of Indian culture and that the devotees organized. And then that was before any books were, had come into Russia, and they were displaying some books there. And, you know, and when they turned around, people would tear out the pages. And they could hear it, act as if they didn't hear anything. People would steal pages and copy those pages. And those pages were like copied and sort of like on little illegal presses and distributed. And then that's how it actually started. Before they ever had books, they got those kind of things. Everything, homemade mridangas. I saw a video of Hungary, and you know there was a Harinam on New Year's Eve, and they were wearing like big overcoats, and they were playing the kartals under the coats. It's like they had their hands under the coats, and they're playing kartals. It's like in the street. Amazing stuff. Amazing. No, Krishna has a plan. I don't know Krishna's plan. You know, it can't go on. The oil's gonna run out, the forest, the deforestation, you know, can't go on, the nuclear waste. Here at the Cape, our former temple president used to work for the nuclear power plants, and one day he was driving me to the airport, and I said, "So, you work in a nuclear power plant?" He said, "And I'm Swami, so tell me the truth." And I cross-examined him. And he told me that they throw twice as much nuclear waste into the ocean as they're allowed to, and manipulate books here at the day. Every year. Go for a swim.
I won't.
That's too cold anyway. Who would swim on the cave on polar bears and penguins? It's ice cold. Once, you know, I went and they took me to the Atlantic side, right? Little did I know, I put one leg in the water. It froze, it turned blue on the spot. I pulled it out, I said, forget it. I didn't. Anyway, polar bears and penguins. Meanwhile, I'm waffling away. Any questions?
Is the great spot going to be a bloody one? A bloody revolution?
Here and there, yeah. Will always be something like that in the world. But no, I don't think so. I don't think it's gonna be predominantly that. No. No. Like you see, there's already countries that went to, like Russia, it's a country, they went through this long ago. You know, what I'm describing, right, of like, nothing on the shelf, money nothing worth anymore.
Smartphone.
Too smart.
Mad Max, which actually showed the ingenuity of people when they had nothing.
Yeah.
It was a very quite interesting how everybody actually survived and how they thought.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Actually, another story is Cuba.
Cuba, also a very interesting place, Cuba, yeah, because Cuba got cut off from America and just without petrol and going back to bullocks, and Cuba is doing great. Right? Cuba flow. So. Shall I end? I guess I milked the cows enough for tonight. Thank you very much. No problem.
Come on, swap out. Yeah.